From Mount Pleasant to Cowdersport, Danville to Indiana, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, after every incident of violence, there are calls across the political spectrum for more civility in public debate. Despite that, rhetoric becomes ever more strident. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to talk about why. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity. And Governor Tom Wolf has vetoed bipartisan legislation that would have provided a pathway out of poverty for thousands of Pennsylvanians. I'll have a town hall commentary on why that veto hurts those the governor claims to be helping. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. In what was a final Hail Mary pass to keep the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's re-gerrymandering of Pennsylvania's congressional districts from going into effect for Tuesday's general election, the Supreme Court of the United States rejected an appeal by Republican legislative leaders. The nation's high court has repeatedly refused to become involved, viewing the issue to be a state matter. Pennsylvania's Democratic Supreme Court justices earlier this year threw out the 2012 congressional map, claiming it was excessively gerrymandered in favor of Republicans. They then, by judicial fiat, replaced it with a map drawn by a California college professor that re-gerrymandered the districts to favor Democrats. As a result, Pennsylvanians this year will vote and the state's congressional delegation will be seated based upon that new map. The spate of bombs or bomb threats at the offices of elected officials or candidates caused a scare at the legislative offices of Montgomery County State Representative Tom Mert this past week. Out of what officials termed an abundance of caution, a bomb disposal robot was brought in to examine a suspicious device. Tests found it was not an explosive. The Tamaqua Area School District in Schuylkill County has become the first in Pennsylvania to adopt a policy allowing teachers and administrators to carry guns in schools. The policy is highly controversial in that gun control advocates strongly oppose the move, but the area is on balance pro-gun, and many residents have embraced the policy, which allows unidentified staff members to carry concealed weapons. Across the nation, at least 21 states have policies that allow non-security employees to carry firearms. The move is seen as an effective way to counter the growing number of shooter attacks on schools, which result in a high number of casualties occurring before off-site first responders arrive. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The mainstream news media has heaped unprecedented criticism and outright attacks on President Donald Trump. The president, of course, has fired back. The nasty tone of national discourse has worsened as Election Day approaches. Why has the national mood gotten so strident? David Taylor is here to host a Capitol Watch discussion. He is joined today by Rebecca Euler and Beth Ann Mumford. David.
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Joining me in the studio, my friend Beth Ann Mumford, Pennsylvania State Director for Americans for Prosperity. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here again, David. Thank you.
Well, today I just want to clear the air. I am just so heartsick and horrified and outraged about the horrific massacre in Pittsburgh, the attack on the Tree of Life synagogue and the worshipers there who were murdered, the police officers who were injured in subduing the shooter. And it's like our whole world's gone insane. And that something like this can happen, and you see the community responding neighbor to neighbor to try to help each other, lift people up. But at the same time, our political process has gone completely insane. That you know, the president, whatever you think of him, he is the president, goes to Pittsburgh to try to, you know, express the sorrow of the nation, and that you have, you know, people all up in arms saying that he shouldn't come. And of course, you've also got this bizarre and you know, alarming pipe bomb thing where you have this nut who was sending dangerous packages to Democrat politicians and former office holders and such. It just the derangement of it all, like, this is new, like, this is different. And I just, you know, something is wrong. And I want to talk through just, and again, not that we even have the answers, but just to say out loud, something is wrong and this is a problem, and that every last one of us, and that includes you folks who are listening, that we need to take charge of our lives and our system of government and the way that we treat one another, because this cannot go on. Bethann, am I wrong? It seems like there's the level of vitriol is higher than it's been in times past.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that our conversation at a high level is very difficult, and our political conversation is made more difficult by the anonymity we have online from people, and that online conversation itself. And I've thought about this a lot because Arthur Brooks has done a lot of work around this question, right?
How do we treat each other
better? He's the outgoing president of the American Enterprise Institute, and I've had the pleasure of hearing him speak quite a few times. And I remember being struck, this was years ago, when he talked about the level of anger that he hears in the political discussion. And while he is a conservative and believes firmly in conservative policies, when people talk about those idiotic people on the left, those terrible, evil people on the left, he says, you're talking about people in my family, people that I break bread with, that I pray with, that I love and want to take care of. They disagree with me on policy, but they're not terrible people. And I've always been struck by that. And in the work that I do, because it is very policy focused, to really think through exactly what you just said. You know, the people that we might be engaged in passionate debate with over policy differences are still people who want good outcomes for themselves, for their communities, for their neighbors. And it's sometimes hard to lose sight of that. And I think that in the environment we all work in, where so much can be, you know, typed out on a keyboard and sent off, and you never actually have to engage the people that you are yelling at or calling names to, when you see that and you look at that, you start to feel like things are really, really bad. But in the work that we do here in Pennsylvania, we knock on doors, we call people. People want to have good, honest conversations, even when they disagree with you. So I think part of the solution is really getting back to those personal relationships, to finding solutions within a community. You talked about what we've seen out of Pittsburgh with the community coming together across all faiths, across all political beliefs, across, you know, men, women, poor people, rich people, feeling that the community needed to heal together. And that's who we are as people. And I think that sometimes the political discussion makes us forget that.
Well, another thing that I mean, again, this is just the germ of the thought, trying to get a hold of. It seems as though we as a society, we want the wrong things out of politics. You know, that it seems like people who are looking to the state as the, you know, as a savior, as a solver of problems. Well, you know, for those of us who've worked with government, seen it up close, like, government is just a machine. Like, government can't love you. Government, you know, you know, I wish it was true that all we need is one more program and that program just needed another funding stream and we'd all be fine. But it's like, no, government is, that's not it's not what it's there for. And it seems like there's like a gnawing kind of emptiness in people's lives that they would invest so much in politics and government that somehow this is the thing that's going to make their lives better instead of the you know, friends and family and being focused on a higher purpose or even just one's, you know, one's life's passions, whether it's the arts or sports or, you know, caring for animals or just like whatever. It's like, how is it that politics and government should be viewed as like a means of salvation for a people?
Well, as Beth Ann was talking, I was thinking to myself that maybe one of the problems is a lack of conversation about the things we truly agree on in the public sphere, because there are basic values that I think the vast majority of humanity agrees on, the vast majority of Americans agree on, and we don't typically talk about those things publicly or in the political sphere. But then after David's comments, I got to thinking, well, maybe there aren't so many things that we agree on that we used to agree on. So maybe that sort of conversation about the role of government in people's lives is one that's pulling people apart now rather than putting them together. Whereas in the past, we might have been able to have a conversation about the role of government in society generally. But now maybe that very conversation is divisive in and of itself. And we can't have that conversation anymore without getting angry.
And you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Beth Ann Mumford from Americans for Prosperity and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. And Rebecca, I think that that's true. And I think that that also speaks to the problem of attacking everyone's motives. And that this is something that I've noticed, especially with, and again, this is with the president. And even though I do not like the way that he comports himself, I don't like the bluster and all those things, the media coverage of him is so hostile, and they never attempt to actually explain him on his own terms. I mean, a big part of that is his failing by not being disciplined and not being focused and not explaining things well. But it's this imposition of ill motives, and this goes in all directions, that I think that that's also part of our problem. And I guess that this, Beth Ann, this goes back to something that you were saying about the sort of the tribalism that we're you know, you get that kind of group mentality of, you know, my side versus the other side, and there's no good faith effort, or at least not enough of a good faith effort, to try to understand people with whom you disagree on their terms to really understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, one thing that strikes me often is, you know, we work in Harrisburg on some policy issues, and there might be people who agree with us, but because we tend to come from these issues from a certain ideological view about the proper role of government and the proper role of individuals within our government, we get some pushback. Well, I agree with you, but I can't be seen supporting that because you guys support that, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
So we lose that opportunity to move good ideas forward, even ideas that we all kind of agree with and maybe could compromise around to, you know, to move something forward. But I'm struck a lot by the idea that, you know, what's the biggest ruiner of relationships, right? Unmet expectations, disappointment that the person that is on the other side of that relationship isn't meeting whatever your expectations are. And as we have put so much more trust and faith in our government leaders, as opposed to ourselves and our neighbors and our community, we have a whole host of unmet expectations. People make promises when they run for office, things that you know they can never, ever do. Either it's unconstitutional or the system's not set up that way or there aren't enough people to vote for it.
Yeah, or it presupposes a degree of power that the state shouldn't have.
Absolutely. And then I think a lot of individuals get that frustration. Mm-hmm. I've got unmet expectations, and who do I blame for it? I blame you. You people over there who have gotten in the way of me getting what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's part of as much power as we've put with the state, with the government, what a person has to lose by the result of an election now is huge. Because if your side loses, then it doesn't have control of all the levers of government anymore. So the more power we've given to government, the more, I think, divisive we've made things because it raises the stakes. Right, exactly. It raises the stakes for the outcome of elections and politics in general. So I think that really exacerbates the tribalism we've been talking about.
This is one of the things I try to hammer home when I'm dealing with the legislators in Harrisburg, to say to them, yes, your first duty is to represent your community, the people who voted to send you here. But yet at the same time, you are also making policy for the entire Commonwealth, which means that the decisions that you make are going to affect people who are very unlike you. And so this is why you, as a lawmaker or a candidate running for office, you need to understand all of the different ways that your decisions are gonna, you know, affect people's lives. And so, yes, if you are a city person, you still have a responsibility to care about, you know, what is the economic health of the rural parts of Pennsylvania or the well-being of the farming community. And, you know, and if you are, you know, one of those folks, you also have a responsibility. Well, what is happening in the city? What is the quality of the education system? You know, what's happening with public safety? And it just seems like, again, this concept of warring tribes, it's like there is no them. There's just us. Whether we like it or not, whether we believe it or not, we are all in this together.
Not too long ago, I think it was the New York Times had an article where you could sort of put in your life experiences, where you lived, what your community looks like, what your education level is, all of that stuff, and determine if you live in a bubble or if you've ever actually lived outside that bubble. And I found that really, really interesting because there's a lot of social science just on the self-sorting that we've all done, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to communities with people who are like us in a lot of ways. And that means that we don't come across a lot of people in our daily lives who are unlike us. And, you know, there is a real value to interacting with people from all walks of life because you learn those shared values that Rebecca was talking about. And you can have better understanding of why people come at different issues in a different way. And I think we've lost a lot of that. And when people disagree, we get angry as opposed to, yeah, I get why they disagree with me on policy. But I think that, you know, we can have a conversation to get to the right path. And we have so little of that now for a number of different reasons. But it's really, you know, we used to just solve our problems at the ballot box, right? Your guy didn't win. Next time we can go vote him in or out or whatever.
Yes. And that's the critical thing the next time, that this is how our system is supposed to work, that we all agree to be bound to the results of an election, knowing that the rights of the minority will still be protected and also that there will be another regularly scheduled election and that this is how we work together going forward. And it just the pushback of – and again, as you said, Rebecca, because the stakes have been raised about power and money and control and all those things,
yes,
that it's almost as though, you know, we're pushing up against that limit of – well, maybe I won't agree to actually be bound by election results. And that's where the system breaks down.
Yeah, I think that's part of what we're seeing in a lot of the anger out there nowadays is a dissatisfaction with the results of an election, which is really kind of scary from the standpoint of, you know, American democracy. We have to agree basically on how our system works. Like you explained, that the results of an election are the results of an election and you move on and you focus on the next election and you have a conversation. But you can't just get so angry that you're unable to accept, you know, the results of any election moving forward. But like we said, the stakes are so high at this point, it's difficult for a lot of people to see beyond, you know, this election sometimes.
And you just... I want it to be better. We're better than this, and I know that we can do better. It also seems as though certainly the way we get our news, with the shouting shows on television, the self-sorting of left wing news channel versus the right wing news channel, and the selectivity and emphasis of the editorial decisions that go that flavor the coverage, this is also not good. If this is what people choose, in the marketplace of ideas and the marketplace of news sources, then you can't keep people away from that. But I guess the question then becomes, how do we get people to want to be better? And I guess that's something that people have to want for themselves, or at least that we can, if there are things that are exacerbating the situation and making it worse, at least we can point to that to say, don't do that. Maybe the first thing to do is just turn off your television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talking about Arthur Brooks, he wrote a column not too long ago that said, you could just take a few weeks off and mm-hmm. you won't miss the plot, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You jump back in, it's the same conversation that we were having 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And so maybe that is the best thing to do. I'm an information hound, so, I like to – I follow all sides of the news. But I think for a lot of people, maybe just taking a break is worthwhile.
Well,
and absolutely, and just promoting within your own sphere the free exchange of ideas and listening to others talk, I think, is also helpful.
I agree. And again, this is the sort of conversation where we're not actually going to solve any of the world's problems. But it was just on my heart. And again, sending love and respect and condolences to the loved and lost out in Pittsburgh, and that this is not right. It's especially not right in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. So anyway, well, thanks to everyone here for listening and being part of the conversation today. Beth Ann, where can people track you down?
You can find me at www.afppennsylvania.com.
All right. Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to find you online?
www.nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. From everyone here at Capital Watch, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. And now a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Among the flurry of bills passed at the end of the legislative session in October was one that established a pathway to prosperity for hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians. This opportunity to escape from the plantation of poverty has been shattered by Governor Tom Wolf, who vetoed the bill out of fidelity to an immoral belief in perpetual government dependency. At issue is a requirement for healthy adult Medicaid recipients without children to find part-time work or participate in job training programs to continue receiving benefits. The goal is to help able-bodied, able-minded adults receive the job training and placement assistance they need to enter or re-enter the workforce. This policy has many benefits. First and foremost, it restores financial independence to individuals and helps them gain control over their own lives. As Nathan Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation explained, quote, work is the most effective way to alleviate poverty, end quote. Government programs, as evidenced by the failed decades-long war on poverty, trap people in perpetual dependency rather than foster financial freedom. Other states, notably Kentucky, Indiana, and Arkansas, have received approval from the federal government allowing them to implement Medicaid work requirements. The Commonwealth Foundation points out 17 states have adopted laws requiring able-bodied adults without dependents to work part-time or volunteer part-time to continue receiving food stamps. As a result, program participants in Kansas saw their incomes rise by 127%, and in Maine, food stamp recipients were able to exit the program after their incomes more than doubled. This would be an especially opportune time for implementing work requirements. Due to the surging Trump economy, employers are having a difficult time finding workers to fill available jobs. The Lincoln Institute's recent Keystone Business Climate Survey found 49% of state businesses have open positions and 28% saying they're having significant difficulty finding qualified employees. So a Medicaid work job training requirement would have the dual benefit of helping individuals prepare for and find work while supplying employers with workers to fill open positions. Additionally, moving able-bodied adults into the workforce would then allow the Commonwealth to target available resources to those most in need. The bill vetoed by Governor Wolf would actually have prioritized Medicaid funding for children, seniors, and for individuals with disabilities. By reducing the number of people on Medicaid, it also would have helped ensure adequate funding of the program for years to come. Given the obvious benefits of this policy, why did it end with a Governor Wolf veto? Part of it is politics. Democrats count on the votes of those dependent on social welfare programs. The party's messaging this election year has been built on scaremongering over health care. The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, has been an abysmal failure that has resulted in skyrocketing premiums, fewer insurance options, and reduced patient health care choices. Republican efforts to repeal Obamacare and replace it with a system that actually works has become fodder for endless demagoguery by Democrat candidates. And then there is the continued adherence to a failed ideology by Tom Wolf and his fellow believers in the welfare state. As Arthur Brooks, president of the American Enterprise Institute, so aptly put it in his book, The Conservative Heart, quote, "They treat work as punishment, view struggling people as liabilities to manage, and focus on unequal distribution of incomes instead of unequal and insufficient opportunities. As a result, progressive politicians try to help the poor with government redistribution programs that frequently exacerbate the problem. These intrusions lower opportunity, reduce ability to create actual private sector work, leave more people dependent on the state, and effectively split the country into two Americas even more quickly." Brooks concludes, "They have made the poor worse off, and that is immoral." And so it is. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGET-AM and WGTY-FM in Gettysburg, WVMM-FM in Grantham, along with WTKT-AM in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.